I'm curious what Hal's take and Dennis's take is on lapatinib. Assuming it becomes available, how would you use it right now off protocol? Dennis?
I think that there's clear data that it appears to be effective in this trastuzumab, quote, refractory patient population. One of the unappreciated facts about that patient population is that trial was really a combination trial of trastuzumab and lapatinib because the patients were stopped on their trastuzumab, and it was varying time. Some of them were out as far as 12 weeks when they stopped from their last trastuzumab. But that's still based on what I said earlier. They've got therapeutic doses of trastuzumab on board when the lapatinib was started. So it was really a combination trastuzumab-lapatinib study as opposed to lapatinib alone in trastuzumab failure, if you're following me.
Sure.
So I think that the preclinical data show that the two drugs together do more than either alone does. I think that the preclinical data show that lapatinib and now the early clinical data appears to be small trial, short follow-up, as effective as trastuzumab. When you look at response rates, the Peruvian study where trastuzumab wasn't available to patients, and so they were trastuzumab naive and they were getting in the metastatic setting, first-line metastatic setting, lapatinib, the response rates look very good. Look comparable to what we saw with trastuzumab in the early days of trastuzumab. So I think there's a real drug here. The question is it going to be safe to be given with cardiotoxic regimens? The next question is, will it be safe to be given with trastuzumab since trastuzumab and it together may potentiate cardiotoxicity? And all of that's going to be answered in the trial that Hal alluded to, which is going to be the big adjuvant trial that looks at either alone, head-to-head, and the combination or the sequence.
Practical metastatic disease. Patient gets, let's say, trastuzumab and a taxane for metastatic disease and then progresses.
Would I use lapatinib?
What would you do?
If it were available, I'd absolutely use it.
What would you have done 6 months ago? Or what are you doing right now in those patients?
You just switch the chemotherapy.
Keep the trastuzumab going.
Keep the trastuzumab.
So instead of continuing the trastuzumab, you'd switch to lapatinib?
Yeah, if it were available right now, that's what I would try next.
Patient responds, whatever, progresses, then what? You go back to trastuzumab?
There's no experience with this, so I think I probably would not go back to trastuzumab. I'd try other combinations.
What about the patient who's had adjuvant trastuzumab and then relapses? Let's start with a year after ending trastuzumab. Lapatinib or trastuzumab?
In that setting, based on what we know preclinically, I'd probably go to lapatinib because of the story that's evolving that in trastuzumab resistance, not refractory, but resistance, meaning there may be some patients that are de novo resistance or HER2 positive. They got the real deal. They got a HER2-positive tumor, but don't respond to trastuzumab. It appears that some percentage of those patients will respond to lapatinib, so I'd consider doing that.
What about later relapses, 2-3 years after adjuvant trastuzumab?
I would consider reinstituting the trastuzumab.
Hal, same questions.
Well, so the first thing to say is that, you know, we've come forward, so we're now in an era of anti-HER2 therapy. And if you look at precedents, we're 100 years into the era of anti-estrogen therapy. And we know that with anti-estrogen treatments, tumors can be resistant to anti-estrogen manipulations like ovarian suppression or to tamoxifen or something else, and then respond to the next anti-estrogen treatment, whether it's an aromatase inhibitor or a drug like fulvestrant. And really old docs know that you can give estrogen and actually get responses in these patients. And really old docs know you can reintroduce drugs that failed to work years ago.
Stop
and get response.
Really old talks.
Well, because I don't think you see this too much anymore. I think usually people sort of get 3 lines of endocrine therapy and then they kind of move on to chemotherapy and stuff. But there are lots of endocrine manipulations and you can still eke out things. So this whole question of what does it mean to be resistant to a biological therapy and how these things compare with one another is one that is a fascinating story in the hormone receptor positive literature. And my guess is it will become a very fascinating story with anti-HER2 therapies as well, as we now get multiple generations of such products. In the narrow short term, we have data and we may have an FDA approval eventually for lapatinib in the setting of patients who previously had trastuzumab plus chemotherapy. And so as second line treatment, if one were to discontinue the trastuzumab, then you would introduce the lapatinib.
Is that what you generally would do?
Well, you know, it's interesting how we got to this point because it's all Dennis's fault because the data from the laboratory models were so fascinating that you could potentiate the effects of chemotherapy by adding trastuzumab, that we all got into this habit of sort of giving trastuzumab with the first line and then the second line and then the third and so forth lines of chemotherapy. And so the MD Anderson and SWOG tried to do a trial where they randomly assigned patients who'd progressed on taxane plus trastuzumab to vinorelbine with or without trastuzumab. And neither doctors nor patients in the U.S. were willing to go on to that study because we all were entrenched in our sense that we needed to continue this. So in a generic way, the lapatinib data are sort of tackling this question, does ongoing anti-HER2 therapy have a role with the next line of chemo? And it looks like it does. We don't have comparable data yet for trastuzumab. I think Dennis's point is very fascinating about, you know, where the trastuzumab exposure comes in. We're going to have data before too long on a very interesting trial that was lapatinib alone for trastuzumab-resistant disease versus lapatinib plus trastuzumab. And this gets at the lab synergy, again, that Dennis's group and others, probably just Dennis's group actually, have noted, which is that there is this favorable interaction. It may be that you can get more out of both drugs than the other. So in the near term, I think you'll have a label that'll be fairly limited to trastuzumab-resistant metastatic disease getting chemotherapy. And we will all be interested in seeing how the evolving trials suggest activity for this drug. Ultimately, we're going to need some head-to-head studies, and that's where the adjuvant data and the CALGBA neoadjuvant study are going to be very informative because it's hard to compare prior experiences. The single-agent trastuzumab trials did show this response rate of 25 to 35%, which is sort of consistent with what the lapatinib single-agent studies have shown, but those were very different patient populations. You know, the single-agent trials with trastuzumab were in the U.S. or Western Europe where women would have had adjuvant chemotherapy in most cases and adjuvant endocrine therapy or multiple lines of endocrine therapy for ER-positive disease but no chemo, whereas in the lapatinib data to date, these have tended to be women with just sort of de novo presentations of breast cancer and no prior treatment whatsoever. So it's a different patient population.
Bottom line, patient gets taxane and trastuzumab as first-line therapy for metastatic disease and progresses as in their next therapy, trastuzumab or lapatinib.
I actually did not participate in that study, just wasn't open at our center, and I think we're all going to be interested in seeing how that combination fares in women just like that. So I think, yes, you're going to see a lot of that second-line use, just as the GSK trial suggested.
What about the patient who had prior adjuvant trastuzumab a year previously, 2-3 years? How are you going to factor it?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So again, you know, you go back to the hormone literature. If it was in the 1980s, if you had tamoxifen and you stopped after 2 or 3 years and then you recurred a year or two later, you gave them tamoxifen again because that's what we had, and it could work. And I don't think anybody knows what the right drug at that choice is. There probably are some women whose tumors are really resistant to anti-HER2 manipulation, and there's some women who still have lingering sensitivity to anti-HER2, and how to define those is something that will keep the lab people busy for a long time.